By the way, did you turn something on? I got background noise of some kind.
Yeah, air conditioning.
Oh, that's okay. It's not terrible. If you need it, go ahead. It's not terrible. Not at all. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
But yeah, believe it or not, it's almost 80 degrees here on today's.
So, but when you have people like our favorite Golden Mice Slacks out this morning on Bloomberg saying a prolonged bull market across stocks, bonds, and credit has left a measure of average valuation at the highest since 1900.
Yeah.
Wow, a condition that at some point is going to translate into pain for investors, according to Goldman, my Slacks. You know, so, when these guys start talking like that, because I guess they talk to their key people and try to get them into safe, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do, because, I mean, they ultimately are an investment bank. You know, people give them money to invest, and so... Now, they have to do a semblance of a good job. They can't think entirely of themselves.
So where do they take their people, and where do they put them? Do they keep them in the bonds?
Yeah, corporate stocks, I would think. The equities market is a much better place to be in an inflationary environment than the bond market. So the real danger is in the savings of America, not in the speculation of America. So
the savings, you mean the savings that are going to get clobbered as far as their value.
Yeah, and purchasing power.
Yeah.
That's that's the real risk. What we've looked at in the past is MZM, mm-hmm. right? Money
where
with
is
a zero
that these days? I haven't even checked for a long
Take
time.
Take a look. It's probably frightening. I guess we're over 15 now.
15 trillion. So MZM, if I just put in MZM performance, MZM. No, I better do Fred, right? MZM Fred Philosophy. Here's Fred. MZM Money Stock Fred. Is that what we want?
That's correct.
Okay. MZM Velocity? No, we don't want Velocity, do we, Andrew?
No, that's another measure. That's fast money is turning over. But money with a zero maturity is MZM.
MZM Money Stock. Is that what we want?
Yeah. Yes.
Whoa. Man, that just goes straight to the right. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Boy, almost $16 trillion.
Ooh. So there's been another trillion and change added since last we looked, which was when? August?
So if you look at 1985, or you look at when gold went up to what?
1900. Or 1980, when it went up to
$850. $850 is about when this thing starts, this graph.
Yeah.
It's a constant... 45 degrees to the right, straight up for the last, 40 years?
Yeah.
This is people that are not spending, they're saving money, right?
Right. Money with a zero maturity that's been stashed.
So why is it that they're always talking about the people's savings rate are just down, and that's a lot of bananas out there just hanging out, isn't there?
That's
$16
right.
trillion?
Yeah.
Dollars?
Yeah, so the individual savings rate may be lower.
Right.
But this is the net result of everyone, companies, individuals, governments, everyone, the money that they have liquid and ready to spend.
So that means what you've called hot money. In other words, you don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to get
it. You don't have to borrow it. Yeah.
It's just ready to spend.
Yes.
And it's not
money
being
with a zero maturity. Yeah. It's mature.
Mature.
It's ready to spend.
It's just been hanging out for $16 trillion.
Trillion dollars. Yeah.
Boy, if they went out and spent that for Christmas, there'd be a problem.
You bet they would. You bet.
you know.
But you could see from that perspective, the government looks at it and says, $20 trillion in national debt is no big deal.
Right.
Americans have $16 trillion.
And we can always steal that from them somehow.
If we steal that, we can pay some of it, yeah.
Well, all you'd have to do is just hire the IRS to go in and take it.
Yeah, go take it. Right. Figure out why they owe it to you.
Yeah, just go, like they do in Saudi Arabia. Have you been seeing what's going on there? You know, the story that I've been reading that from a place that I kind of trust is what this is all about, that they were short cash.
Right. They need. It's a toll.
It's a toll. So what they did is they went out and
gathered
up all the billionaires, threw them in. Well, they didn't throw them in jail. No, it's really in a big hotel.
House arrest. Yeah,
it's house arrest, and it's they got girls and food and stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice hotel.
And if you guys want out, just pay.
They just pay the toll. This is totally get out of here. Yous could check into this hotel for free, but yous got to pay to leave.
I can't believe they're getting away with that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So who is this new king dude? Is he like somebody special? He's got creative to get some dollars, right?
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, well, you guys have been corruptly stealing it for all these years, enriching yourselves.
And we haven't been, you know.
And you know you've been filthy criminal. You know that you have.
Yeah.
And so think of the double message being sent there.
Yeah.
You know, if we need your money, we're going to take it, and you should go out there and behave now. Get out of the arms and drugs and terrorism business.
Well, I guess that could happen here, too. I mean, you've talked about bail-ins and stuff like that, but...
Or the direct one-off tax. And people in the administration have been talking about that. So the idea that they look at that MZM figure and say, okay...
Well, let's get some of this, yeah.
Yeah, 10% one-off on this MZM.
Oh, you mean they just say, let's just gather up a $1.6
trillion. Trillion,
and,
yep.
You know, you guys just get taxed. Isn't there a law against that?
Well, of course there is, yeah. There's a no state shall make anything
with gold and silver.
But gold or silver coin, a tender in payment of debt. Yeah, that's the
law, is there any
the
reason
too.
People are buying some digital thing because they think that they're secure? I mean, are you surprised?
I don't know. No, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that people would sit still for something as basic as an erosion of their constitutional right to sound money, and for that same group of people to accept digital currency as a means of storing their wealth and be comfortable with it. Well, again, until you get a little and you start thinking about what it's going to be worth in the future, you don't think about these things. But once you get a little pile of money, you start thinking, wow, that's got to last me the next 20, 30, 40 years
or
until the rest
than
of my
that,
life.
The way we're going,
maybe,
right?
Maybe I want to leave some to my kids. Well, then you start thinking about what the heck is it worth? What is it worth? And just storing it in this value, in this form, how's that going to help me?
Uh-huh.
So to those Saudi billionaires, you know, I imagine any money, liquid MZM type money that they had, was right on the chopping block.
Well, you know, the banking whole thing is just such a incredible, I mean, it's just hilarious. Here, just out yesterday, Wells Fargo, one of my faves, right? The foreign exchange market trades around 5.3 trillion each day. Whoops. What happened was is they told people that they were charging them 15.15% on foreign currency transactions. I mean, that's
$5 trillion.
Yeah. Who's going to check? Well, whoops, we were charging 4%. We made a mistake.
Sorry.
Who's the dude at Wells Fargo? This guy just seems like he's out of, or girl seems like he's out of control.
Well, anytime you base the pay of the people in the company on the profit made by the company.
So that's what they do, right?
Yeah, then, you know, the people are going to want to maximize the profit because they're going to get the most paycheck.
Sylvia writes in for Andrew Goss, currency historian. It's The Real World of Money. We're live here November 29. Sylvia says, in the past, wealth does not disappear. It just changes hand. Is
That's
cryptocurrency
right.
the first that could disappear and not transfer of wealth? What
no,
is
no,
she
because...
saying here?
Yeah. Yeah, they put $10 trillion into Bitcoin and then the price plummets. Is that a case of wealth disappearing? And it isn't. It will be a case of once they get the mechanism in place to go short enormous amounts of Bitcoin, then without disrupting the market, then that fall will profit those folks. So wealth will be wiped out, but it will also be a zero-sum type game.
Yeah, because the $10 trillion,
it was just
a phone number.
Right.
I mean, it was just a made-up number because people were buying and selling it.
Correct.
Nobody really lost a lot of money.
And nobody made if they never sold.
That's what I mean. Nobody made or lost. It was just, like you say, a zero-sum game.
And remember, as Dudley pointed out, it's not legal tender, so it's not even counted in the money supply, frightening as that might be.
Oh, the $175 billion in Bitcoin market cap?
All of that growth in market cap is not reflected in MZM or in any other currency form because it's not legal tender. It's a token of wealth. So
it's curious that there seems like there's just a real lack of interest in the cryptomaniac people of actually getting people to use more cryptos to buy and sell. That's probably going to just be a... That thing didn't work. Right? You don't think they're probably not going to ever do that, are they?
Well, that it doesn't make sense. It's one of the key elements of what money is.
Right. But it doesn't make sense to use Bitcoin to go to Starbucks.
Will.
I mean, come on.
No, it won't. Yeah. But it does make it does make sense to take the underlying technology that supports Bitcoin and apply it to the dollar. That makes perfect sense.
Which is what's going on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're taking it out for a test spin. Like it's like if you ever saw one of those fake casinos where, you know, go ahead and gamble all you want because it's all just tokens.
It's just all this stuff like that.
Yeah. So in this case, it's not legal tender, so they experiment, and once the kinks are all worked out, then you bet they're adopting that technology for the central banks. That blockchain method will be used to transfer dollars and to transfer yuan and euros and every other mainstream currency that there is.
John is in Saudi Arabia. He doesn't have a billion, so he's not been arrested, so he's good. He writes this morning, he says, I enjoy the show. I have two questions. Employees say that there is a lack of qualified job candidates. Others say there are plenty of qualified job candidates if employees would pay a decent wage. Does Andy have an opinion about this?
Well, yeah, that's a supply and demand market too. So, you know, the employers who are saying they can't find qualified candidates are usually the ones who are trying to import workers from other countries to take those jobs. You know, they want to bring Indian engineers into the United States because they'll work for less.
Which is what this whole visa thing that Mr. Trump is making.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so they say, oh, we can't find qualified engineers in the United States. And John is correct. No, you could if you were willing to pay. But since you're really trying to import cheap engineers, you'll never be persuaded to do that.
No. I know people. This is so funny. I know people that actually... When they go and they call a company and they get somebody from China or India that can hardly speak English, they say,
yes.
I want somebody who can speak English. I need some help.
I'm one of those.
Are you really? Do you do that?
I am. I'm sorry.
What do you say to them?
I can't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I cannot understand what you're saying.
And it's hard to have confidence when somebody does not have the language really down. You know what I mean? It's hard to have confidence that... You're even getting across what you need or, you know, it's really strange.
Yes. But you know, I mean, I'm not to say that if they speak with any kind of an accent,
who cares?
If I really can't understand what they're saying, then I have to worry if they can understand what I'm saying. Yeah, I deal with that right away. Communication is key.
No. Second part of John's question, he says, one argument I have heard against debt as a blessing is that there, by the time people pay back a 30-year mortgage, they
paid back three times
far more than the bank in the original amount, of course. Right. Is this a valid argument against debt as a blessing?
Well, it could be. So I bought that $25,000 house in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I paid it off in 1997, I paid $75,000 for it.
It's usually about three times.
Three times.
Okay, so $200,000 house, you'd pay $400,000 extra, correct?
Yeah.
Over 30 years.
You pay triple over 30 years.
So how do you make that work? I mean, how does that
Well, you make
sense?
That work by that over that same 30 years, how much has the house increased? The first three times are given to what you paid, and then everything else is yours.
Okay, and then you would also then factor in that you could write off the interest.
Absolutely.
Correct. And you'd also factor in...
That you'd have to pay rent.
That you'd have to pay rent anyway.
Yeah.
And then you factor in inflation. You're paying back with cheap dollars. So
that's right.
So if you really do the math, I guess the debt is a blessing thing works, right?
It does work.
Does it?
Yeah, over that same 30-year period, the value of the house is now more than triple. And so as a result, everything else is yours.
Historically, has it always played out like that?
No.
Even with all the dips and dives? And
just with the advent of mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And unbacked money.
No.
You know, when the dollar was solid in 1850, technology notwithstanding and boom and bust cycles notwithstanding,
mm-hmm.
you bought a house in 1850 and you went to sell it 30 years later, it didn't bring that much more money. It wasn't worth triple what it was when you built.
Yeah.
because the money was relatively the same, and there were no secondary mortgage markets and so forth. So it was a pure supply and demand market. If you had the money, you could buy the land, build the house. But 10 years later, it would cost the same to buy the land and build the house. So again, this all comes with sound money. So in a sound money environment, you're not going to get the kind of growth that you do in a fiat or unbacked money environment.
Mm-hmm. Here's one from Don. He sent an article, and I can't read the whole thing, but the title is, he wanted to get your opinion, "The Banker's New SDR Crypto Blockchain Will Enslave Humanity." What? do you have any idea what he's talking about here?
Well, so yeah. So, you know, before we were told the SDR was going to take over, right, the currency. That was going to be the new world currency.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of died off for a little while. China went into the SDR, but now it's going to be a crypto SDR with blockchain technology. And same thing. This very same thing that you said about Bitcoin applies to SDR. When you can go to Starbucks and say, "How much is that coffee? It's $1.10, or how many SDR?" Then maybe SDR will enslave us all. But just because they're going to apply blockchain technology to the, or an open ledger to the SDR payment, doesn't trouble me at all.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it is the real world of money. We've got some interesting emails. We're going to get to them all. Also, if you'd like to use the phone, which nobody does anymore, 888-663-6386.
Hi there, Dick Allgaier here. I was a mainstream television news reporter for over three decades. I normally never do commercial endorsements. I am very skeptical of health supplements, but a friend of mine told me about his experience with Synergy One, so I purchased a bottle, and my wife and I have been using it for a few weeks now. I very much dislike so-called energy boosters, those little energy drinks that have caffeine and guarana and other things that make your heart race. This is not that. My experience with Synergy One has been great. My mood is better, my joints feel better, I have more vigor, more stamina, way increased productivity. My wife and I both noticed that we even dream more. So I recommend Synergy One. It's really good stuff. I'm having great results with it.
You can click on the One World Way banner ad right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
Previously with Andrew Goss, I asked him why would someone want to buy coins from his company?
So if you don't know coins, you better know your coin dealer. And, you know, you shouldn't buy coins from someone who isn't well-known registered dealer. So if they're an NGC dealer, they're registered with NGC. If they're a PCGS dealer, they're registered with PCGS. Ask questions. Don't just, "Oh yeah, here's 10 grand or 50 grand or 150 grand. I just want to buy coins, you know, let me know what I'm getting." And no, that's not how an intelligent investor does it. And we do not let you do that. So if you're not willing to learn about the coins that you're buying, maybe you should find another coin firm. Don't call this one, because we're going to insist that you know why and how a coin is rare. And once you know that, then I think you can take that knowledge into the marketplace and make intelligent investment decisions.
Aha, what a concept, intelligent investment decisions. I've known Andrew for 25 years. He's the real deal. His company, SDL, 800-468-2646. Give him a call if you're interested. 800-468-2646.
We are listener-supported. One Radio Network. It's The Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. Once again, here's Patrick.
Well, how were you able to do a commercial and go to the restroom at the same time? That was pretty good. You're a very talented guy there, Mr. Goss.
The magic of science. Technology.
Technology. Okay, let's see. There we got some. Get these other emails here. I bought myself a box of Canadian silver maples, mostly because I was thinking that the U.S. dollar would collapsitarian here in California about 6 to 7 years ago when it was $40 an ounce. Sort of bought it on the fly as a friend persuaded me to buy, thinking it would keep going up. I'm planning on keeping it long term as safety for inflation, but am I in trouble for buying maples instead of eagles?
Well, no, I wouldn't say you're in trouble. But you do live in the United States. Maybe you should trade those things for some old silver dollars. You know, they've been going up. Even when silver goes down, the premium associated with those, because there's fixed in supply and increased in demand. So, I would trade them for American coins. And not necessarily the Eagles, because you're just switching cars there. That's the same kind of vehicle. But if you buy something that has a chance to attain some numismatic premium over the long term, then you're better off. So with an old silver dollar from the 1880s, like a Morgan silver dollar in uncirculated condition, you're going to get something there that, you know, is rare. And each year it develops a bit more numismatic premium. So you have two ways to make money. Not only can you make money if silver goes up, but you can also make money from the collector value that accrues to these things over long periods of time.
Here is Laura. Can I get Andy's opinion on the upcoming Supreme Court decision on cell phones, privacy, and tracking you? Are you up on this? I heard a little bit about this.
You don't have any.
is the decision about to come out? And tell the folks what she's talking about, what Laura's talking about.
Well, essentially, the right of a person to be secure in their digital realm is being tested. You know, does that count? Do you have an expectation of privacy when you speak on the cell phone or when you send an email or something like that? So if this ruling is, of course, against Americans, which I expect it will be.
Really?
The idea that you have any privacy at all should be, you know, dead and buried. Don't say anything on your cell phone that you wouldn't want someone else to hear.
So, but if I understand the Supreme Court thing now, are they arguing it now, or is the ruling going to come out in the next few
days? No, I think it's in the argument phase.
Argument. So what they're arguing is if they, let's see, if I understand, I heard on the radio, that if the gov, the one we love, wants to track your whereabouts, because somebody's taking this all the way to the top, who was arrested, track your whereabouts without a warrant.
Right.
From your cell phone, because Correct. You can do that, right? So that's what this argument is about.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
you're not even speaking on your cell phone.
No, and they track you, of course, because you got
that's right.
They know where you are.
Yeah, that's that new fancy 911 thing. So the question is, the Fourth and Fifth Amendment say, right, your right to be secure in your things, and that nothing that you have can be searched without a warrant. But in the case of the cell phone, where is it going? That tracking occurs without a warrant. And so if I can use a GPS device to track your movements, then do I have to have a warrant?
So that's what this is about.
That's what this is about.
You suspect that the boys in the robes are going to rule for the gov.
Yeah.
Do you?
Which is what they do.
I thought they didn't have a more conservative kind of court. Now, wouldn't they be? No.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Should they need a warrant? Should they say, oh, we want to just track Patrick's whereabouts?
Yeah, just because.
And we're going to ping his cell phone and
see where
it goes.
We don't like that Prius he's driving. It's got not enough pollution.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, I thought, wasn't there a ruling, though, Andrew, where some kind of big ruling where they actually ruled that your cell phone, because it's now your banking and your emails, and it's more like a wallet, that it is your private?
Well, okay,
so
that was
some kind of ruling?
That was a case when someone was arrested, they took their cell phone.
Yeah, right.
And then got the stuff off the cell phone.
Right.
Right. So...
So that went towards the privacy, that one, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a good ruling. So they said you can't do that.
Right. You need a warrant.
You need a warrant. In the same regard, so, you really can't make this up. So this is Facebook. So what they're going to do, this is what they say, what they want to do, is they're going to use artificial intelligence to scan your thoughts to enhance your user safety. So in other words, they want to scan your post, right, to determine if Andrew might just be somebody.
He might be somebody that's going to get a gun and go shoot somebody.
So then we could go to his house, like in Minority Report, and just see what he's doing. I mean, how can you even make this up? What is this Zuckerberg smoking? What is he eating for breakfast? Too much granola or what?
No, he wants to help.
Oh, he wants to help. I know he means well.
Here's how his thing is going to help you. Jeez. It's going to help. His invention is going to help humanity.
Did you see the movie Minority Report? I mean, that's what
it's about, right? Yeah.
That's what it's about.
That's what it is.
Yeah. That's what it's about. Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they preemptive strike on those who...
Yeah, we're going to catch you before you commit this crime you're thinking about.
Well, it makes sense to me. And then facial recognition, too. This is good. So now the stores, the whatever retailers are left, they figure, what are we going to do, right? We have facial recognition software and stuff and get all set up here. And the brick and mortar retailers are getting into knowing who their customers are. They're going to be able to say, well, there's Andrew. He's about this old and he is a male and whatever. Is this legal? I mean, is somebody going to take this to the guys in the
casinos?
The
casinos have used this technology since it came out.
Really? Long time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they want to know, is there a card counter or a known cheat in their casino?
Uh-huh.
So they use facial recognition. They used it at the Super Bowl in, 2010. So what does that mean? 7 years.
Go ahead.
Yeah, to scan the people as they came into the Super Bowl so that, hey, if we got a known facial match or gait, that's the other thing, gait recognition, and they put the two together. This biometric data that is collected on you is, again, not subject to search warrants.
It's just collected. And so,
if you've ever seen the cop shows where the cop shows up and says, oh, let me see the security video there.
Sure.
They don't go get a warrant. They just look at the security video.
Sure.
So same thing here.
Yeah. So the idea, if you want to go all the way out to George Orwell and stuff, is somebody takes a picture of your face with some kind of a scanner, and they could come up with a file. Which would be, I don't know if I'm sure they have the software. I don't think they're smart enough to do it really well right now, but maybe they are.
DARPA
and NSA and all these guys. They would know everything about Andrew Goss that they wanted to know, right?
Once they know that it's Andrew that they're looking at, yes.
And
so that's what the facial recognition does. So it says, oh, okay, we see him now.
But how do they hook up Andrew Goss with your face? Where does that happen?
Well, that biometric data, everything from a driver's license photo.
I see.
To a Facebook photo.
Or a website or something like that. Sure. Like One Radio Network. I see.
It's aggregated.
Out, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they would know probably what medications you were on, right?
Easily enough. Cars registered, planes registered.
Everything.
Stocks, bonds, bank accounts.
Life
insurance.
Boy, man,
real estate, that's a
police person's dream, man.
Bond holdings. Cash in the bank.
Uh-huh. State's attorney dream, boy, to have one of those dudes on your
cell
phone, right?
They had PROMIS, Prosecutor's Management Information System, back in the 80s that was aggregating this kind of data. So today I can only speculate, but I'm sure it's much more intense than it was 30 years ago.
Gabriel writes in, I enjoy this show. I happen to be very fortunate where I did have a very rich relative leave me a considerable sum of money. I won't tell you how much, but it's a lot. And
good.
I'm wondering if, good for you, I wonder if Andrew can give me some ideas on how I could protect that from lawsuits and such, possible lawsuits, and will trust fulfill that bill for me. Thanks for your help.
Right. Well, okay. You know, I'd hate to say everything that I would do on the air, but give me a call, Gabriel. I'll be happy to discuss it with you. One thing is for certain, the trust, in the past, people have set up a separate entity and transferred their assets into that trust. The Rockefellers are famous for these. In fact, they would well, one famous story about a cat scratching a visitor and they thought they were going to be rich, but the cat was owned by a trust and it was the only asset. So if they sued the trust, they could only get the cat. And this, of course...
I love that.
Right.
Only Rockefeller could figure that out.
Right? Yeah, well, that amplifies the idea of moving your assets into a trust, but then you kind of surrender control. I don't know. It's not comfortable for me. For me, the best way I've found is what I do. The gold and silver coins kind of protect you from everything. They're not visible to what we were just talking about, this aggregated data out there. They're not visible to someone who's nosing around your balance sheet. They offer the sort of privacy, and you can gift them to other relatives within your family at any given time. And as they say, possession is 9/10 of the law. So gold and silver coins in your physical possession are the best protection against any sort of seizure from your bank account or any type of an action that would threaten your visible assets.
But if you had a lot of gold and silver or just a lot of dollars, if you had it in some kind of a trust, doesn't that protect you? Somebody falls in your driveway and says, whoa, Andrew's got a lot of coins. Let's go after him. I mean, doesn't that protect you?
Well, no, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
It doesn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought that's the piercing, a trust too.
Well, that is what they allegedly do, but the crossing of the T and the dotting of the I's never becomes more important than when you operate a trust or a corporation. The idea that they pierce the corporate veil or they shatter the trust, the idea that, oh, that thing was invalid from the beginning and so everything you did after it was no good,
right?
That's too easy to get caught up with. Again, physical possession of anything. If someone gets a judgment against you, they're going to take something away from you. They have to physically come and take it before they actually have it.
But couldn't a court rule that they can get all your coins because...
Sure. Yeah, come and get them.
Come and get them.
Come and get
them. But you don't want to have that day happen. You know?
No, yeah. You don't. But, if they say, we're seizing your bank account, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
So they'll sweep the bank account and take the last dime. If you say, well, there's the pile of my coins, and you forget some that were in another room, well, who's that on? You, that's on. And you have that option to do it, whether you want to withhold or not. You're not given that choice with every other form of asset. So you can't make the ultimate choice and say, okay, I'm going to disobey this court order and keep possession of this money in my bank account. It doesn't happen. A court order says you must turn over all of your gold coins and you stand defiant. No, I'm not going to do it. Then that's a different story altogether.
Uh-huh. So the only way you really have some protection with trust is when you are not the trustee. All of a sudden, it just switched. No, we're fine. We know it. Yeah, tell Fred we know what's going on.
Fred, he's on. Okay.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Fred, they know it.
It's back on.
Okay,
it's back on.
Thanks.
It's back on. So, but the only way to really have, the only way to really do it is to have somebody else control the trust, which is what the rich dudes do, right?
That's right.
So I would control your trust, and you'd have to trust me, otherwise it would not be good.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but for me, I know I can trust myself. I'm worried about trusting other people, though.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially when money's involved, folks have a way of
getting strange,
they do get
money
strange.
Does weird things to people.
It does weird things to people. They do weird things for it. So So a person who might otherwise you think be the most trustworthy person, you put them in charge of your money. Suddenly, they're not trustworthy anymore. Uh-huh. And folks have found that out the hard way. So for me, again, the only protection is gold and silver coins in your possession, in your safe, and then it's up to you to decide whether to hand them over to any third party or even reveal their existence. That's generally up to you.
Mm-hmm. And so their existence is not known. Their own existence
not publicly known.
Not publicly known only until you sell them. Then you have the responsibility to pay the taxes on the profits.
Well, that's correct.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. You pay the exact, no matter, again, I'll
no
say
matter
this.
What it is, couches,
no matter
cars,
what it is. Really.
Yeah.
An old oil can in your garage.
That's theoretically, you're supposed to pay taxes on.
That's right. That's right.
That's what the government does.
And I've seen people
pay
$500 for an unopened can of motor oil from the 1930s. So it is. If you find one of those in your garage, you sell it for $500, and you bought it back in 1930 for 20 cents. then you owe $499.80 in tax. That's just the way it is.
Well, the Wall Street Journal says, here's what you do if you're Mr. George Soros and you've got $18 billion that you want to just, all you got to do is transfer $18 billion to a private charity that you control. Yeah. There he will be sheltered from the Internal Revenue Service forever. This may be the single biggest tax dodge in the U.S. history, yet no one on the right or the left seems to have raised an eyebrow. Oh.
Yeah, foundations.
Foundations are kind of good, right?
Yeah. No, the Ford Foundation and others.
Nonprofit foundations, right?
History.
They're kind of good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So your ability to shield your wealth from not only taxes, but from lawsuits.
That's why they do that, right?
That is why they do
it. It's legal. I think
in the case of the Rockefeller estate, Botanico Hills, I think it's called, they bought like this 5,000 acres, and right in the middle of it, they built a house.
Yeah.
And then they made a compound in the middle, 10 acres or so. And then they donated the other acreage to the state.
Oh.
With the idea that it would be preserved and, you know, not used.
Pretty smart.
And then they just regulate access. So now they don't have to pay property tax, and they still get to enjoy the no neighbors surrounding their house. Mm-hmm. You know, again, this all done through charitable foundations.
Yeah. Well, if you got enough money to pay attorneys, you can get anything done, really.
That's true.
Pretty much
that
done.
That's true.
What is the old line with the attorney? It's like,
I don't need an attorney. That's J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
I don't need an attorney to tell me what I can't do.
Right.
I need an attorney to tell me how to do what I can't do.
That's correct.
That's J.P. Morgan's quote.
Well, they got their divorce papers ready for Brexit. It's only going to cost $50 billion.
So see where we are now? So when it happened, when they voted, I said, so your husband or your wife just told you they wanted a divorce.
Right, right.
So now the relationship changes, and later we're going to go to lawyers, and then
and work out a deal.
You'll find, right. So here's the deal. How much? 50?
$50 billion, yeah.
Cheap. You know, cheap. Like,
so what
Ray
are they, going to get for their $50
billion? I don't care
billion?
What it costs me. Get her away from me.
Yeah.
I don't care what it costs.
What is the U.K. going to benefit from doing what they did? How are they going to benefit? Why did they
do this? They can control their own borders to begin with, access to their country.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
No longer in the hands of the EU.
Ooh.
Now.
That was a big deal, right?
Great Britain can be great again. Great Britain again. That's it. Yeah. So the idea that, you know, your country and the pride in your country has now been diluted because anyone from any of these other European countries can just come into your country.
And you have no control.
And you have no control. That's right. So I think that was the basis of Brexit. The Brits got tired of that. You know, they're very proud people. They've been around a long time, and British heritage was, you know, something to be cherished.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to have been cheapened by the influx of immigrants who had no concern for Great Britain or its people.
Yeah. So they were smart enough, one of the few countries, that said, though, we're not going to do the euro-dollar deal. We're going to keep our British pound.
That's right.
So they weren't all in.
They didn't do that till the last minute. Yeah, but they in the beginning, it was thought to be a single unified currency for the whole common market, and then, yeah, Great Britain dropped out. They said, we're keeping our pound, which, thank goodness, because that would really make it messy. So they don't have to buy their way out of that currency nightmare.
So then, Andrew, the people that are all in, like Germany and Greece and all these folks, they're in the euro and the union. They're not getting out, are they?
They
I mean, it ain't happening.
It would be way more expensive for them because, you know, they would have to pay their share of the national debt, so to speak, and Great Britain didn't have to deal with that because they weren't part of the euro system. So they wouldn't have to bear any of the bad euro loans made to Italy and Greece and so forth.
So why did people, even like you talk about proud people in Germany and these people, why did they even agree to this whole thing in the first place? I mean...
Well, if you like your doctor, you can keep him.
Yeah, right, yeah.
there was a lot of that going on.
That didn't end well, you know.
Yeah. Well, and so very same kind of thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
In the same vein, here's an email from Juan, not Juan. He says, with the separatist movements going on around the world, Catalonia, yes. Scotland, etc.
Sure.
Do you think states in the U.S. would also want to secede from the Union someday? I'm thinking about California and Texas primarily.
Sure.
Or what state themselves breaking apart, like Northern California, Southern Oregon, and all of that stuff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we went through that 150 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And the idea that a state could say, okay, we don't like what you're doing, and we're going to secede from the Union.
They're not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy.
They thought they had that right. They did. Those states' rights folks. That's why it's tough to condemn anyone who fought on the side of the Confederates in the Civil War as a slave owner, or, you know, you can't just put that mantle on them and say you know, because they wanted to preserve slavery. That wasn't the case. It was, hey, what do you mean we can't leave if we want to?
Yeah, what do you mean? What's up with that?
That really, yeah, exactly. So they say that argument was settled then, that, you know, in preserving the Union, President Lincoln, proved that you don't have the right to secede. So would it be a good thing? Maybe. Could we be better off? Maybe. But would it be allowed to happen? Not a chance. Not like, it would be more like Catalonia than Great Britain. You know, California votes to secede from the Union and suddenly finds itself at war, literally, with the federal
government.
They
just get their panties in a wad and they're just not hearing it, right?
No. That's right.
Yeah, no, it's not going to go. No?
No.
Yeah. Bob says, I was reading that this Senate version increased the deficit by 1.5 over 10 years. Is this true? $500 billion or more was just spent on recently in a short span of time, as Andrew told us about it. Then how in the world could they cook the books to keep this restriction besides taking away benefits?
Yeah, right, besides taking away benefits. And again, the answer is they can stretch out the length of time that we pay back the debt in. Right now, it's about a seven-year amortization. They stretch that out to 30 or 50
right.
So that they, you know, funded debt over a longer period of time, and so less of the tax money that we're collecting is going to service the debt, and then the rest can go to reducing the deficit. And then second, and I think that the Senate bill also doesn't score this in, is the increase in payroll tax that will come from new jobs being created in the United States. So this corporate tax cut, and again, on the face of it, a tax cut, but when you're getting a smaller piece of more revenue, sometimes you can get more overall revenue. If you can increase revenue enough by lowering the piece that you take, then it washes out. So, and I think that's what the Trump administration is hoping for, that with the tax cut, they'll stimulate so much economic activity that the payroll tax revenues will increase dramatically. And remember, we get the bulk of our federal revenue not from the corporate income tax, but from the individual income tax and the payroll tax. So those two combined are our two biggest categories.
Uh-huh. This is Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, and The Real World of Money. We'll stick around a few more minutes and tidy up on some emails and some other things. I'm going through my notes here. let's see. Anything have I missed that I wanted to bring up? Let's do this one. This is kind of interesting. Marsha, dear Patrick and Andrew, I enjoy the show. Given that we are all on the plastic and not the organic couch in the U.S., as Andrew has taught us, is there a difference in the rights between the native-born state citizens and naturalized D.C. citizens?
Well, yeah, the hierarchy of sovereignty, right? So the argument there is that, okay, so you were born in South Carolina and you're a citizen of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
By virtue of that fact, you can enjoy all the rights that would be given to a D.C. citizen or a 14th Amendment citizen. And that just said that there is no federal citizenship, and we're going to create one. So a person that is a federal citizen or a naturalized citizen is not a citizen of any state by virtue of their birth there. but is in fact a citizen of the District of Columbia by law, by edict. And the hierarchy of sovereignty says, okay, well, then the people are sovereign. They're first, the natural-born citizen. And then the state's government is next, because that was created by the natural-born citizen. Then the federal government is next, because they were created by a compact of the states. And then the naturalized citizen is last, because they were created by the last entity on the totem pole.
And that's
the federal
what most
government.
Of us are, right?
Or are you a U.S. citizen is the question we're asked.
Yeah.
And we say, yes, we are, of
and
course.
That means we're last on the
We're last. On we're not list. First anymore.
Ooh.
So there's the difference. I hope I made it clear.
Wow. Didn't.
I mean, you're still a citizen. You're just, you know, in the four classes of citizenship, you're not at the top of the heap. You're at the bottom of the heap, which is where they like you anyway. So.
Yeah. This is another one, the same kind of an idea. Here, let's see.
I'm happy lots of folks are starting to finally understand that. It's all about jurisdiction.
Yeah. Some core beliefs of some people out there that I've been reading, according to CR, says that the 14th Amendment created a second inferior class of citizen, the federal U.S. citizen. That's true, right? That's what you just said.
Well, that's what this line of thinking suggests, yes.
Do you believe that's accurate?
Well, it is accurate. I mean, that if you read the 14th Amendment and look at the Dred Scott case that it was based upon, it's like, okay, you can't just say, the Supreme Court says, you can't just say that this guy's a citizen of the United States. You know, there's no mechanism for that. So that amendment was put into place to fashion a legal citizenship for these newly freed servants, whatever. Slaves. So, you know, when you outlaw slavery, okay, it's great, but now these guys are free, these gals are free. What are they? They're not citizens of anything. So we need to fashion a legal citizenship for them, and that's what the 14th Amendment did. It created a federal naturalized citizen.
Federal naturalized citizen. So how then did all of us who were not slaves in that regard get involved with this group? How do we get plunked in there?
Through adhesion contracts.
Through sitting on the plastic.
That's correct.
Okay, sitting on the plastic by using
security,
driver's license,
citizen, bank accounts, discharging your debts with Federal Reserve notes instead of lawful money.
I mean, there's no way out, right?
Benefits.
You're on the plastic.
You're on the plastic.
Yeah.
And, well, no.
No?
I mean,
no,
I there are those who could say, okay, that's it.
I'm done.
I'm dropping out.
I'm sitting on the couch, dude.
I'm going off the grid. Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay. But then the rights
it's
that
tough,
you think
though. So the second part, the people that I've been studying are that the United States is a corporation which only has jurisdiction in Washington, D.C. and is separate from the United States of America. A corporation is created in the name of every person who gets a birth certificate, and that corporation is used as collateral for government debts. Is that true?
Close. And so this is, right, that straw man argument.
Straw man argument.
Right.
That you're Andy Goss all caps, right?
Yeah, that you can create now, you can tap into this hidden bank account and start using it to create money on your own.
Mm.
While it is true.
Don't try it at home.
Don't do it. I'm telling you,
don't do it. Okay.
While it is true that in enumerating you, you know, instead of saying, I own apartment building on Broad Street, I own Patrick Timpone.
Yeah.
And Patrick Timpone works and generates X number of dollars a year that he has to pay a portion of to me, the federal government, as an income tax.
Good for me.
And so he's an asset of mine, and I need to borrow some money, and I want to pledge Patrick as collateral. So
that's the whole idea of that concept.
That's the whole idea of how a country issues money based on its citizens' revenue, the revenue that
citizens pay to. So it's kind of true.
So it is kind of true, yes. But the idea that there's a super secret bank account and you can hijack it and get the money out of it.
Probably not.
Probably not. Don't try it.
Don't try
it. Because, yes, there are ways that you can trick the IRS into issuing you a check. But it doesn't mean it's your check. So,
if a person uses their Social Security number, they are volunteering to be part of the United States Corporation. Is that true? That's what it is.
Yes,
this emailer is doing some research.
Yeah, no, he is. He's obviously doing some research. Yeah. So Social Security number, the enumeration, is one of those adhesion contracts that, you're kind of signed into without your knowledge, really. You don't know the full extent of the requirements just by signing. That is the reality of the marketplace, that you are collateral and that you volunteer to pay a portion of what you earn towards the federal debt or the cost of running the federal government. Historically, the idea that you work and get paid and then you have to hand a portion of your money over to someone else, that's slavery, plain and simple.
So he ends the email here, this fellow. He said, I'd like to evaluate the claims of some of this sovereign movement I've been reading about on a legal basis. What are your opinion about the beliefs of these groups? Could you refer to any legal documents relevant to my research, particularly interested in the current legal status of these groups' claims as well as the history behind them? Interesting question.
Yeah, it is an interesting question. And the kind of the best book I've found on the subject, of course, Understanding Jurisdiction, The Rape of Justice by Eustace Mullins, but a rather easy book to understand and read was one I found written by Colonel Archibald Roberts back in the 1980s. It's called The Most Secret Science. The Most Secret Science.
That's pretty good.
It's a good primer on this whole concept, but I would urge you to understand that when you take this stance, you'll do things that will put you into direct conflict with the government,
not good.
The federal government particularly. So approach with caution.
So your bottom line, if I understand, I don't want to put words in your mouth, is that we're on the plastic. You can read all this stuff and it may be technically true, right?
Go ahead and eat ice cream. You're on the plastic.
You're on the plastic. Go ahead and eat ice cream.
You can eat ice cream.
Get sloppy.
You don't have to worry about spilling it on the couch.
And just go ahead and pay into Caesar what is Caesar's. Pay the taxes, right?
Yeah.
Get a lot of the income tax dollars on your 1040 so you can borrow more money.
Correct.
And
buy more assets.
And buy more assets. Use the system that they've created.
Use the system to your advantage
use debt and use the dollars.
That is the benefit of, right? They confer that benefit to you. So when you declare your income on your tax return, then the banks use that income declaration
to
decide
lend, right?
Whether or not you can buy that house or that car or whatever. Right.
That's what they do.
The more that you earn and pay tax on, the more you can borrow and buy.
Which is what the big boys are doing. We talked about this show in China and all the, there are 4.5 quadrillion in stuff out there that people with money are using debt to buy.
I mean,
we're not advising that, but they do.
I am.
I know.
You take the typical small business,
right?
That most small businesses need capital. And so they decide one of two things. It's either A, you take all your profits off the books and you keep them in cash until you get rolling. Or B, you declare every dollar that you earn and maybe even don't take a few deductions that you're entitled to so that the true picture of your business can be revealed to your bank and say, look, it is a viable business. We're yielding a profit. So if that case exists, then the bank suddenly says, okay, Mr. Business, we're willing to fund you with a credit line and with a small business loan and so forth. But if you present a tax return that hides all of your income, that you don't have any income, you're not declaring and you're not volunteering, guess how much you'll be able to borrow? Nothing. So even if you go do this research and discover, hey, well, I'm not a person required to file a return, my revenue is not taxable, and I'm going to be sovereign and separated from the system, well, guess what? You're excluded from everything else. So, again, think carefully if you are considering this. And, boy, you better make sure you understand it and can elucidate it yourself, because you may be called upon in a court of federal law to do exactly that.
Yeah. Final one here. This is an interesting question on Red Book coin valuation. I bought a 1923 Double Eagle PCGS holder of MS63. When I bought the coin, the 2015 Red Book placed a value of $1,850. The Red Book now, 2018, puts the value at $1,600.
Okay.
Looking at the price of gold per ounce over the time of 2015 now, I don't see that amount of price change, excluding some of the short peaks and lows. How did the Red Book people weigh in the price of gold in these mostly bullion-valued coins?
Well, they tell you right in the front of the Red Book that this is all based on this much price bullion, and they tell you differently each year. You know, the problem with the Red Book, if I may, is while it's a great guide, it's once a year. And, you know, okay, so you're getting price data in 2015 that was compiled in 2014 and put into the book. And while it's a good guide, you know, it's not rock solid locked in stone, because the price of gold fluctuates and the bulk of the value in that coin is in the gold. So if I were buying something like a $20 St. Gaudens in an NGC holder, because I don't prefer PCGS, I would look at the price of gold first. Had it been, is it higher now than it may have reflected in the Red Book? And then, of course, ngccoin.com, they're starting to publish a price guide now based on auction records and current offerings of coins. So consult more than, especially if you're investing a sizable amount of money, more than just an annual price guide. So make sure, obviously, if the price in the book was $1,800 and you were being asked to pay $2,800, you'd know that you were way out of line. But if you stuck close to that book, I think you'll always be, and as a general rule, you'll always be better off than not using a price guide at all.
Uh-huh. Well, finally, people oftentimes want to know our business plan. So my business plan is soon, so NBC is going to probably be calling us and wanting us just to do a show, because I saw today NBC just fired Matt Lauer. Here's another one.
Really?
Yeah, for sexual. There goes Matt. Boops, there goes another.
Oh, the irony.
Hoops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Brian, they're just falling like dominoes, aren't they?
Yes, indeed.
So Rita, stick around. They're going to just run out of people and probably call us and want us to do a show on NBC.
That's good. Yeah, that's really
we have some
good
staying power here.
And then, you know, of course, the young ladies that I pursued in grade school, I didn't realize I was harassing them, but I guess I was.
I did take a few girls to the drive-in, but they were drinking beer and we did neck. I mean, is that okay? I mean, can you get in trouble for that?
That's
these days, you just don't know.
Apparently, you know? We might. Yes, that's right. Poor Matt Lauer. Who knows what he did?
Oh,
well, the abuse of power is bad, no matter what you use that power to abuse. You know, I don't care if it's this particular subject or guy with his hand in the cookie jar taking money. So it's all the same. When you abuse your position over those below you, beneath you, beside you, or dependent upon you, then you're probably not a good human being and don't deserve to be America's conscience, as Matt Lauer thought he was.
Thought he was. Yeah. Well, okay, we'll end this way. This is kind of interesting. Katy Perry. You know Katy?
Katie's kind of
she's kind of a rock star. What is she?
Pop rock star.
She went on Twitter and she's getting it. It's going viral. She's asking Warren Buffett,
What
do you think of Bitcoin, Warren? Isn't that hilarious? What do you think Warren's going to say? What do you think he's going to say?
He's going to probably refer her to Tulip Mania and she won't know what the heck he's talking about.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. She said, stick to music, Katie. That's what I would do.
Well, nobody went to the movie Tulip Mania. Have you seen it yet? We need to go and see that. Yeah, it was really a bust. It just didn't happen. And this was before the Weinstein thing. It was a Weinstein movie, but nobody went to it. Yeah, nobody's ever going to go to it. You know?
Suppose they gave a movie and nobody came.
Yeah. All right, kiddo. Well, thanks a lot. This was fun. And the studio sounds good, so we're all set. And
great.
We'll keep our internet open. Good.
We just have to remember, kill the air conditioner, unplug the phone.
Well, we're fine. So what's up with you today?
Coin category, I have a 1908.
You have a cool coin category?
Oh, ooh, man, yeah.
What is it?
It's 1908 San Francisco Mint,
$10
Indian,
yeah,
in mint state 65. one of the highest grades.
1908 San Francisco Mint, a $10 yeah. Indian?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
In Mint State 65.
Mm-hmm. How much money would I have to wire you for that little puppy?
Well, your personal check is fine with me, Patrick, but yeah, it would take 35,000 bananas.
Like 35,000 thing? Yes, for a little guy with an Indian thing?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's got to be in the top 10 finest known of this coin. And when you consider that, the historically low mintage of that coin, it's probably a steal at 35,000.
A steal, huh?
There's a great coin. Yeah. Now, try to find another one.
Something like that, I'm just kind of curious. Don't want to take half any ounce business. Of gold. But something like that, I mean, you'll sell this fairly quickly?
Today.
Really?
It's going to be my mission today.
Just to sell it.
Today.
And
yeah,
people were out there with 35 G's, will trade you.
Well, there are more people out there with 35 G's than there are people out there with 1908 S10 Indians in 65.
Ah,
I promise you that.
So there's a method to your madness.
Just the chance to buy this coin, just the opportunity to buy this coin is rare. Yeah. Not every clown with 35 grand can buy it. Did I mention there's one? I have one. So only one person is going to be able to own it. That's
isn't that curious how that is?
Yeah, it's fun.
It's a fun thing. Well, yeah. I guess it's just more fun than just, doing baseball cards or bitcoins. But
you can make a lot more money doing bonds, that's for sure. They're much more widely accepted and recognized. But to me, the value is dubious. So if a thing has dubious value, I want to know that what I'm giving my customer 10 years from now or 20 years from now is still going to be there. I don't want to be the one that's responsible now because they've lost their life savings or 35 grand in this case.
Do you think that we'll ever see in our lifetime some form of money, whether it be, who knows, some kind of form that is going to be backed by gold and silver once again? Do you think we'll ever see that?
Well, the pendulum may swing
always
in that direction.
Going pretty wacko the other way. It could go back.
It comes with a complete and utter loss of faith in the other direction. And, if a country like Zimbabwe... If you see more of those things coming along, more hyperinflationary blow-offs where the value of currency
game over, right?
Just,
it's just game
so,
over.
Yeah, the more of that happens, the less people have faith in it anymore. And then the only way to get them back is to start with the basics.
Start over.
Okay, here's a currency, and it's backed by gold, and the gold is here, and,
just like the old days, right?
Yeah, but at the end, at the bottom of it all, is always that thing. Hmm. This is the gold. And now what we have to trust that you have an auditor and who's counted your gold, and you have another auditor who's counted how many of these notes you've issued or this electronic stuff. See, to me, just get the coin. Just get the coin. Put it in the safe. When you need whatever it is you need, then the coin comes out and gets converted to the coin of the realm.
Yeah,
there's no sense storing the coin of the realm because you don't know what that's going to be tomorrow. What you want to store is value. And if you think what I'm suggesting makes sense, well, then please give us a call, 800-468-2646, and learn more about it.
So I just had a thought here. I keep saying I'm going to end, but it's fun talking to you. So what if you did a blockchain kind of a dollar
with gold?
Well, but see with blockchain you would need, of course, you could just have so much gold and say this is what we got, right? We got 10,000 ounces and it's worth X, right? And we got $25 trillion, so every dollar is 0.000 whatever ounce of gold. I mean, would that work?
But then
would that work?
Janitor backs up a truck in the warehouse where the actual gold is and runs off with a bunch of those gold bars.
Well, you'd have to have a big building to hold this gold.
No.
I mean, would that work, though? I mean, would people like that? Would they like it?
Well, they may embrace it, but, it's all about the trust that the gold is there. This is the original scheme of the Federal Reserve.
This is what they're going to
do. Give us the gold.
Right?
Yeah. We're going to store it in the vault. It's going to be federal. You'll be able to see it anytime, and we're going to protect from the fraud that you've been used to in the past. I mean, that's what gave us the Federal Reserve. The idea that just you or I or anyone could start a bank and put 10 $20 gold pieces in a vault and start issuing $20 bills and then issue twice as many $20 bills as we had gold, and then in the middle of the night took the gold and ran off. So I hate this sort of chicanery, right, is why the Federal Reserve came into existence, and it took them 10 years. They were doing exactly the same thing themselves,
10 years,
issuing more notes than they had gold and silver to back it up. And
yeah.
Could we go back to that sort of a system? Not without a redeemable currency, where, you know, it was redeemable.
You could go into the bank and exchange, right?
Yeah. Give me the gold right then on the spot. That's the only thing that fosters discipline and makes them stick to the script and not issue more notes than they're supposed to. So once that discipline is hammered into them, then the odds that you'll get a $20 gold piece when you show up with a $20 bill are good. And if you don't get it, then everyone else knows, and now that's how bank runs start. So, no. The only thing I'm comfortable with, physical gold and silver coin in my possession. That's what the Constitution defines as money. That's money to me. And at the end of the day, that's the final claim. So
I think you're missing
how many pieces of paper.
Yeah,
you have,
I think you're missing a bet there. There could be some land for sale in Zimbabwe. The new dude, his name is Managwede, something like that. He just came in because they, you know, arrested
CIA
the old guy.
Approved him.
CIA approved him. But he did say something that was quite interesting today, that he's going to offer amnesty for any funds that are stashed abroad. Could you imagine this? These people, like, oh my God, it's like, poor people.
Bring your money back and we'll let you keep it.
We'll let you keep it. All right, kiddo, thanks a lot. Have some fun.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, if I come up with 35 grand today, I'll give you a call and get that.
I better be quick.
Indian thing. See you soon.
Thanks.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, 800-468-2646 is our number. And you call that whenever we're live. We'll be here with Richard Massey, Meridian Grace. That'll be tomorrow. We'll have this podcast up for you in an hour or so. I love you all very much. Thanks a lot. See you in the morning. Thanks for your ongoing support of all of our products. And that's how we do things around here.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.